And as it opens its new season this evening, the New York City Opera is struggling to make a comeback. Long the scrappy alternative to the plush Metropolitan Opera, the company recently has been through financial and artistic turmoil, as Jeff London reports.
New York City Opera makes its home on the plaza of Lincoln Center, right in the shadow of the Metropolitan Opera. But New York Times music critic Anthony Tomasini says there's always been room for two opera companies in town, because both have been so different.
You weren't going to see the big international opera singers there. It wasn't going to be the big fancy grand opera productions. But you'd see really interesting repertory, a lot of American opera, a lot of 20th century opera that the Met was not doing, and then eventually a lot of baroque opera. You'd see young singers who were very gifted, many of them on their way to big careers, who looked good and acted well.
Among the superstars who began their careers at New York City Opera were Samuel Ramey and Beverly Sills, who eventually ran the company. But recently, New York City Opera has fallen on hard times. Last year, there was no season. The company closed its theater for a costly renovation. Then the Belgian impresario hired to lead City Opera bolted when he couldn't make his ambitious plans happen. And finally, the stock market and the opera's endowment plummeted. Anthony Tomasini.
New York City Opera almost closed down for a $15 million deficit. Only in classical music is that a lot of money. You know, that wouldn't pay the lunch budget on a big Hollywood movie set.
The City Opera's board hired George Steele to run the company. The 43-year-old isn't well known in the opera world, but for many years he ran a very successful and innovative series of concerts at Columbia University. That's where City Opera soprano Amy Burton met him.
I think he's really the right person for this moment. He's a brilliant administrator, and I think the company needed rescuing. I think he's absolutely up to the task, but he also brings an artistic vision that I think is crucial to City Opera's future.
Since he started in February, Steele has raised $14 million and has supervised a renovation of the New York State Theater that he says will vastly improve its acoustics.
An astonishing change in the room. It's bright and zingy. I'm really excited about it. And this is before we've done any true acoustic work per se. This is just simple expedients like removing carpet, removing a few seats, putting in the aisles, changing the wall facing, this new glorious pit.
In previous years, City Opera presented as many as 16 productions with a budget of around $40 million. This year, with a budget hovering around $25 million, Steele can only present 5 operas. He hopes to grow from there.
And it falls to me to kind of identify the equilibrium size of the company, where it makes sense to be.
The season's 5 operas represent the company's historic strengths. They're doing classics by Mozart and Puccini. They're presenting a little-known Handel opera, a little-known 19th-century French opera, and they're reviving a contemporary opera which premiered in 1993. New York Times critic Anthony Tomasini is impressed by how much has been packed into this mini-season.
And it makes a big statement to me that he's starting with Esther, this Hugo Weisgall opera. Thorny, fascinating, dramatically compelling opera.
George Steele says there's one more aspect of the upcoming season which reflects the company's long history and what makes it different from that other opera company across the plaza.
We've been committed from the very beginning of the company. It was Mayor LaGuardia's vision that the company be accessible financially for everyone in New York to affordable tickets. And we have something like a quarter of all the tickets we'll sell this year are $25 or less.
New York City Opera's season opens tonight with a gala performance of All American Work. For NPR News, I'm Jeff London in New York.
This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Renee Montaigne.
And I'm Steve Inskeep.
I was not born in San Hispania. My mother came from Rotterdam.
We're going to hear new music now from a performer with a famous last name and a hauntingly familiar voice. NPR's Vince Pearson reports on the solo debut of The Son of Paul Simon.
Harper Simon has recorded with other groups before, but this is his first attempt to carry a record. Pick a track. It's easy to hear where the man gets his voice.
Everyone seems so certain. Everyone knows who they are.
Some performers might be flattered to hear they sound like Paul Simon. Harper, now 37, sounds conflicted.
Is that true? Sometimes you hear people and they sound like their parents and it kind of makes you cringe.
They all got more friends than they can use. Except me, 'cause I'm a fool.
As a younger performer, Harper says he sought to avoid the comparison. Paul Simon played folk music. Harper got into punk.
I just didn't have the voice that doesn't carry over the loud, distorted guitars. So I had to go back to the acoustic guitar because actually it suits my voice.
It's even money, you'd think it's funny if I got a pie in the face.
Simon says the album is a tribute to rock records he admires from the 60s and 70s. Think Bob Dylan's Blonde on Blonde or the Byrds' Sweetheart of the Rodeo. And even recruited some of the same players.
The northern winds have found their home.
With help from a producer known for his work with Dylan and Johnny Cash, Simon booked a group of veteran Nashville session musicians. Harper's dad, Paul Simon, also helped write songs. Harper toured with Simon as a teen and even joined him on stage occasionally. But he says this was the first time the two ever really collaborated.
And I didn't intend to collaborate with him. I guess he got inspired and I had so many tracks, I was kind of swamped. So I was happy that someone was going to try to solve some problems for me. You know, what can I say? He's a good writer.
Harper Simon says he never thought it would take this long to find his voice. So maybe it's fitting that with this album, an album he made with help from his father and other early musical influences, he may have done just that. Vince Pearson, NPR News.
Over the last several months, TV shows have been clamoring to interview the pop superstar Rihanna, but not just because she's topped the charts in dozens of countries. Back in February, Rihanna's boyfriend, Chris Brown, beat her up as they were heading to perform at the Grammy Awards. In August, he was sentenced to 5 years probation for a felony assault. Rihanna will finally talk on TV tomorrow during Good Morning America. NPR's Zoe Chase says she's been trying to figure out how Brown and Rihanna are feeling through their music.
They had been like the prince and princess of pop R&B, so last winter's Ugly Violence was unbelievable. The picture that circulated on the internet of Rihanna's face all busted up was almost irreconcilable with her perfect pop star image. And the idea that sweet-faced Chris Brown could have done that to her? In the stunned silence that followed, we waited for them to explain themselves. For months, neither one released any new music. Now both of them are back on the radio, and I'm scrutinizing every song and video like a mixtape my crush gave me in 10th grade, listening for a hidden message in every word.
Only thing that's on my mind is on this town
tonight. Rihanna came back to the charts late this summer. She headlined Jay-Z's single Run This Town, and she owns the track. In the video, she looks hard, like you can't mess with her. Rihanna's back, and she's badder than ever. But Chris Brown is back, too. In late September, he released this tight, unapologetic pop song. In the I Can Transform Ya video, Chris Brown is dancing, surrounded by his trademark Lamborghinis. He doesn't smile once as he hammers out the track. It made me think. I guess he's forcing himself to move on. But Rihanna doesn't sound done.
Take a breath, take a deep, calm yourself, he says to me.
Rihanna's next single was called Russian Roulette. It's not a love song. It's about surviving an impossible situation. Rihanna ends her song with a gunshot. The very next day, Chris Brown debuted a love ballad, Crawl.
Everybody says we're through. I hope you haven't said it too.
He sings, everybody says we're through. I hope you haven't said it too. Okay, so he's not over it. But I don't know if Chris Brown can do Sweet Longing anymore. He pled guilty to felony assault. The pain here isn't sexy. It just sounds like pain. Rihanna and Chris Brown are probably not creating a dialectical mixtape writ large for us all to hear. But what I hear in their music is Rihanna saying, I will not be humiliated by the events of the past year. And Chris saying, despite the awful violence you've seen, I want you to think I'm still lovable. That's a complex conversation for the pop charts. Zoe Chace, NPR News.
This is NPR, National Public Radio. Finally this hour, reclaiming the legacy of an old-time musician. In 1925, a record by the singer and banjo player Charlie Poole sold more than 100,000, an amazing figure for the time. But Poole has never fully received credit for his contribution to country music. He's never made it to the Hall of Fame, for example. The singer-songwriter Loudon Wainwright III hopes to draw more attention to Poole. He's put out a 2-CD tribute called High, Wide, and Handsome, and our music critic Robert Christgau tells us about it.
Charlie Poole was a hard-living rounder who died at 39 in 1931 after a binge that lasted 13 weeks. Songs he made famous were kept alive by Bill Monroe, whose bluegrass innovations owed plenty to Poole's North Carolina Ramblers. Harry Smith included him on his now legendary Anthology of American Folk Music. He's been covered by such moderns as Jerry Garcia, The Chieftains, and Tom T. Hall. Nevertheless, Poole remains obscure. Loudon Wainwright means to change that.
How high, wide, and handsome, carved on my headstone with the date I was born, plus the date that I died. Then take one from the other, all that's left as a number. Just remember I laughed twice as hard as I cried. High, wide, and handsome, that's how I like living.
High, Wide, and Handsome was produced by Dick Kinnett, who along with Wainwright wrote or co-wrote 9 of its 29 songs. This is fitting in part because Poole wasn't a songwriter. He was an irrepressible entertainer whose material ranged from crazy old folk songs to W.C. Handy blues to Tin Pan Alley parlor ballads. Wainwright's version of the craziest folk song here, I'm the Man Who Rode the Mule Around the World, borrows verses from everywhere, but begins with the two that also kicked off Charlie Poole's original recording.
Oh, she's my daisy. She's black-eyed and she's crazy. Prettiest girl I thought I ever saw. Now her breath smells sweet, but I'd rather smell her feet, for she's my freckle-faced, consumptive Sarah Jane.
He's the man who rode the mule around the world.
The other reason High, Wide, and Handsome accommodates new songs so readily is that it's a kind of musical documentary. Most of the new material is about Poole, as well as in his manner. These include descriptions of his first recording session and his last spree, but my favorite is a song he couldn't have sung, a song Wainwright couldn't have sung either. It's from the point of view of Poole's wife, and is performed by one of Wainwright's many singing ex-sisters-in-law, Maggie Roach.
Now and again out of nowhere he'd come back with his hat in his hand, and I could never stay angry with that dear, sweet, impossible man. Sometimes he'd sing in the kitchen, sometimes we'd cuddle and spoon, but mostly I couldn't help feeling like I married the man in the moon. It was
was hard being married to Charlie.
Loudon Wainwright, Dick Kennett, their musicians, and most of Wainwright's family celebrated High, Wide, and Handsome in a one-of-a-kind concert in Manhattan's Highline Ballroom. It would be nice if this project became so renowned it generated more such events. But Wainwright told us he had a more modest goal. Finally, a place in the Country Music Hall of Fame for a rambling man named Charlie Poole.
Ramble, ramble till the butcher.
The tribute album from Loudon Wainwright is called High, Wide, and Handsome, the Charlie Poole Project. Our reviewer is Robert Christgau.
Butchers cut him down.
You're listening to All Things Considered from NPR News.